This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hey, my name is Aaron, 29, and I live in a wee village just south of Glasgow. I've been sober curious for a couple of years now, regularly listening to the podcast while stuck in the drinking hamster wheel. I would class myself as a middle-aged drinker, starting from a young age to drinking 2 pints of Guinness and a bottle of wine every night as standard, ramping it up at the weekends. I had my last drink on the 31st of December, 22, kicking off the new year with dry January. 2 weeks in, I took the plunge and decided to join the community. It was the best decision I made. I'm now 100 days sober and looking forward to smashing the big 365. I have made friends for life in the community who are always there if I need support and to help celebrate milestones. Previous failed attempts at sobriety were always on my own. Connection is key. If you're listening to this podcast and you're sober curious or attempting this on your own, I encourage you to make that leap and join us. You won't regret it.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It is fantastic to have you listening wherever you may be on your alcohol-free journey, on your AF adventure. You could be listening to this now as a drinker. You could be sober curious. You might be completely alcohol-free, sober, teetotal, however you want to describe it. We're not bothered. It's good to have you listening. Quick introduction as to who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley. Everybody calls me Shaz, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. 5.5 years alcohol-free. Started my 50th year, having been doing this for like 5 years. Yeah, because I've just said that, 5.5 years alcohol, blah, 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 blah. I stopped drinking at the age of 44. Best decision ever. It was only ever meant to be a break. I drank too much, too quickly, too often. Gave myself that break and then everything started to change. So much for the better. The only regret I have, the only little regret that I've got about this is not doing it sooner. But c'est la vie, you live and learn. I do not do this on my own. Co-host Ben Anderson.
You're laughing because you know what I've got prepared
You're pathetic.
No, I'm just really excited. Okay, quickly, hello. I'm Ben, I'm 35. I live in Liverpool. I'm stepdad to Alfie and Millie, dad to Leo, husband to Jem, and I'm alcohol-free now. Was it 4 years in the summer?
Coming on for 4 years, 4 years, Ben. 4 years.
Yeah. And I can't believe we're here. I mean, I can't believe me and you are here, Sharon, talking about alcohol-free life anyway. But I can't believe we're here with Scottish Kelly, our guest today. Because I think the first time we said to Kelly, who's been a community member for a long time now, I think we were on a walk and we said, Kelly, why don't you come on the podcast? And she said something like, feck off your ball bag, I think was the, coming on your podcast, you bamport. Well, what? I'm sorry, I've just Googled Scottish insults. I'm not coming on your podcast, you jobby bar. I don't know what any of these things mean, but Kelly's laughing, so obviously it does make some sort of sense. You howling fandom, I'm not coming on your podcast, is the kind of thing that she would say. And does it make any sense, Kelly, at all?
No, I wouldn't speak like that at all.
But she swore, Sharon.
She said something similar.
Never,
yeah.
Ever come on our podcast, you glaykit basser. Well, I don't know what that means either. I'm just literally, I could be saying really, really offensive.
You probably
some really
are.
Funny. Just quick side note, Shaz, there's some very funny Scottish slang.
You
look like you've been digging for apples on a chip pan. No idea what that means. His head is full of wee shops and they're all shut. No idea what that means either. Just great. Right, turn Google off.
Turn it off.
It's, right.
Back in the room, hello. Ben. Back in
Ben,
the room.
Ben, 35, Liverpool, Kelly's here. There we are.
Amazing. Yeah, so I think I've had similar conversations with today's guest and said, Kelly, come on the podcast. Kelly, come on the podcast. Kelly, come on the podcast. No. That's my impression.
Is that your Scottish? That was worse than mine.
That was abysmal.
No. Kelly, you don't sound like that at all. I'm really sorry that Sharon's offended you before you even said hello.
How dare you? But this episode for us, it's special for a million different reasons. So, as Ben mentioned there, Kelly from Scotland, if you didn't know, very, very Scottish, joined the community ages ago now, absolutely ages ago. It's been a journey, to say the least. It's been up and down. But, I mean, we'll get to all this towards the end of the podcast because there is so much to talk about. Kelly now works with OTI. You know, started off volunteering a time with us. Now she works with us, which is amazing. Like 13 months alcohol free. I don't know where to start, Kelly. I suppose other than by saying, first of all, from me and Ben, thank you for finally giving in. Oh. No, not apologising.
Sorry about the intro.
Yeah.
And also thank you.
Yeah. Sorry about everything that Ben said. Sorry about the new. but massive thanks for actually going, you know what? Fine. Just to shut you two up. Fine. I'm going to come on the podcast. So, Kelly, genuinely, from the bottom of our hearts, we're chuffed to bits. Welcome to Over the Influence.
Thank you. After everything you guys have done for me, I thought it was only right that I come on. I have been a member for 29 months. So if you do the calculations, I'm 13 months alcohol-free. So it's not been a straightforward journey, but you guys have been there the whole time for me and the community. And I wouldn't be here. 100% would not be here if it wasn't for you two supporting me all the way and the guys in the community.
That's nice.
How are you feeling, Kelly? There you go. First bit done.
A little bit nervous.
Don't be nervous. Yeah. You're amongst friends.
Can I ask, what are you nervous about, Kelly?
Probably just being vulnerable and sharing my journey. It's not been an easy journey. I've hurt a lot of people along the way. I've caused a lot of destruction along the way due to my addictions and my poor mental health. So, yeah, just that. It kind of brings it all to the forefront when you're thinking about it. And, yeah, just nervous about sharing it. But I think it's also very important to share it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, just so you know, I want to say this right from the off. If we ever venture into territory that you don't want to go into, just say, feck off your ball bags and we will stop talking about
we'll
it and change
that.
The subject. But,
but in
all seriousness, you know, you talk about what you want to talk about and don't feel pressured by Sharon because you know what she's like.
You're so
we
rude.
We work with her every day. Sorry, Sharon, over to you for a serious question.
No, I'm not going to speak now. Now you've done that. It's just Kelly, I'm mean. No, not at all. You know what, Kelly? I echo everything Ben said there, absolutely. And it's massively important to myself and Ben that you feel comfortable talking about it. I suppose I want to start by asking you, yes, we've introduced you as being, you know, over a year alcohol-free. You are doing phenomenal things in both your personal life and your private life. How hard is it, like now, today, to talk about where you were compared to where you are now? I suppose it repeats a little bit of what Ben said. It's, you know, why are you feeling nervous? But how does it make you feel having to sort of revisit some of what you've been through in order to share what you want to share?
It's really difficult, and it feels like a different person and a different life. Like when I think of everything that's happened over the years and all the things that's happened over the years, it feels like I'm talking about a different person. And it's also really difficult to live with the guilt of all the hurt that you caused and all the shame that comes with that. But also I'm very proud of how far I've came. And
it's okay to have tears this early on in an episode. It's absolutely fine, Kelly. It's fine.
I'm also very happy that my family are very proud of me, which is kind of the main reason you keep going. So yeah.
What's made you upset there? Is it talking about the pride or is it talking about the past?
A bit of both. Probably because I feel proud that I can say that I'm proud of myself because it's taken me a long time to be able to say that. It also carries a lot of guilt. When I say I'm proud of myself and I have come so far and I've done some great things, that I'm very aware that there's people that I've hurt along the way that may be like, oh, that's great, you've got your shit together, but what about the hurt you've caused us? So that produces a bit of guilt in itself. But yeah, I probably just got upset there, the fact that I said I'm proud of myself because it's taken me a long time to say that.
You should be proud of yourself, like with knobs on. Ben's nodding.
I'm just thinking about how you did it. What was the stupid thing you did at the weekend, Kelly? 60 miles, how many miles was it running? What did you do?
I did
daft.
The 50k ultra marathon.
50k?
Yeah.
50k?
Yeah.
That's absolutely, it's just balmy. Why?
Is it because I love running? I've always loved running. That's the thing as well, when I talk about the things that I have done. So in the past year, I've did two marathons, two half marathons, and an ultra marathon. Now, when I was drinking, I used to always think, oh, I'm going to do a half marathon, and then I would never do it. And it also, it's important to say as well that it's not a case you give up alcohol and then you start doing all these mad things. Like, these are, this is who I was at primary school before I went to high school and before things started changing. I was in the cross country team, the football team, the netball team. It's kind of, it was part of who I was, and I lost that over the years, and now I've got it back. So it's not that I'm doing anything that I've not always wanted to do, if that makes sense.
You've had a great few weeks, actually, because you've also got something to be very proud of in terms of, can you tell us about the holiday that you just came back from? An alcohol-free holiday with the fam?
Yeah, I did. So there was 16 of us for my mum's retirement. We all went to a villa, and it was a pretty boozy holiday. No more than any other family would booze. It was like cocktails at lunchtime, drinking the airport, just the usual standard normal drinking for going on holiday. But there was no temptation whatsoever for me, which really took me by surprise. I really upped my Zooms before I went. So I was on a Zoom most nights, just kind of topping up the advice from everyone else and just getting a bit of support. So I wasn't in the least bit having a wobble, but I joined the Zooms just to kind of, just to top it up, basically. And I had said on the Zooms a few times that I know that there will be temptations where I will think, oh, I would love to join them, or maybe I should just have one. And by saying that out loud, I should be ashamed to say that I would be even tempted, given the destruction and the hurt that I caused when I was drinking. But at the same time, I always say how I feel now, because it kind of processes the thoughts instead of them sitting in my head and kind of creating something and maybe making me go towards making mistakes, if that makes sense. And that's what I love about the Zooms. You can talk open and honest about anything. So yeah, I was kind of all set for going on holiday and having some temptations and finding it difficult and having to remove myself at different times, but there was none of that at all. All I felt was just sheer pride and felt really grateful and lucky that I wasn't drinking. I was just looking, thinking, I am having so much more fun than you guys. I seen sunrise every single day. I had everybody out on the bikes. I ate nice food. Me and the kids went round just about every ice cream and cake shop that we could find. My youngest, Jack, who's 15 this year, he'd said at one point, can we go back to that cake shop? And I was like, no, we've tried that. We're going to a different one. I wanted to try all the cake shops.
different sort of crawl on holiday, the cake crawl.
It was just what, and it's actually, it just spurred me on even more. Like, it's grew that alcohol free muscle, if you want to call it. We talk about that quite often. I thought when I went on that holiday, I was really dreading it, because I thought that's not the sort of holiday I can ever enjoy again. But I thought, I'll need to go, it's my mum's retirement, suck it up, go get through it. And it was absolute opposite. I enjoyed it so much, and I'm now looking at other holidays that I can go to, like the Canaries and Spain. Like, I thought I wouldn't enjoy those types of holidays again. I thought they were just for drinking. And they're not. There's so much more to be enjoyed.
I'm just checking in now. So we've got the kind of physical challenges that you've taken on to be proud of. We've got an alcohol-free holiday where you're a great daughter, a great mom, and just enjoyed every moment of that holiday. Another reason to be proud is the 12-month milestone that you recently hit, 366 days alcohol-free, as you'd like to remind us, because, of course, it was a leap year, so there was an additional day in there.
Yeah.
Kelly, there's so much to be proud of, isn't there? Let's talk about, then, the journey to 12 months, 366 days alcohol-free.
We got there eventually. So I joined OTI in July 21. I joined the community. And when I joined, my alcohol consumption wasn't causing as much destruction as it led to. I'll go back, actually, when I first had alcohol issues was 2015, and I had a massive breakdown. But before we realised I had had a breakdown, everyone could just see that I was drinking too much. And my dad was a recovered alcoholic his whole life, my whole life. My dad's no longer with us, but he was a recovered alcoholic through AA. So there was no alcohol in my house growing up. My mom didn't drink either, really, unless it was like a family party. There was no alcohol in the house. But in 2015, I started to have some issues with alcohol, and the straight away the everyone was saying, right, you need to go to an AA meeting. Your dad was an alcoholic, so you must be an alcoholic. It's hereditary, and that must be the cause. So I went to AA meetings, and I met some lovely people and heard some really great stuff, and I've still got friends who are in AA at the moment. But it just wasn't for me, and it wasn't working. And it got so destructive, my drinking, that I was running away. I was running away from my family. My family were having to search for me and find me. And then without going into detail, that's when we realised it was more than just alcohol. There was other underlying issues. So I did get some help with my mental health, and I spoke to a psychiatric nurse, and talking was great. I got a lot of stuff out there, and it really, really helped. But what it didn't teach me was how to deal with those feelings that I was feeling, and those thoughts and the things that happened in my past. Talking helped, but I didn't have any tools on how to manage them. So life went on, and from about 2018 to 2020, I was back to normal, quote, normal drinking at the weekend, Saturday, maybe Friday, Saturday, nothing, no issues. And we went into lockdown in 2020, and I was under a lot of pressure, like everybody was in the house. I was working from home. I work in IT, so we were really, really busy. Working from home, the stress of the three boys in the house on my own, and I was drinking more just like everyone else was. I could see old habits keeping in, and I started following Andy Ramage on his Facebook Lives every day, and decided to sign up to the Office Athlete course in October 2020. I didn't stick to that because I was drinking every weekend and I just couldn't do the work. So he let me pause the course and restart it in January 21. Again, never followed that because progressively my drinking was just getting worse. Found OTI and joined in July. And by that point, my drinking was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, not causing any external destruction in my family, but a lot of destruction internally. So I joined OTI and decided, right, that's it, I really need to stop drinking. And I didn't want to only stop drinking because of how I was feeling. I just knew it was holding me back in so many elements of my life. But see, I could see old habits creeping back in. So I joined OTI in July and decided to give it a go. But I, as Shaz would say, I didn't put my full arse in there. The thing is, I could stop drinking for a while and I didn't do it. I wasn't a weekday drinker. I didn't do it all the time. So I could stop for a couple of weeks, no problem. And I would be out running and my exercise would start again. And then in August 2020, there was a very serious incident and there was police involved, and I put myself in a very scary situation, and for my family. So I decided, right, that's it. I really need to try hard with this. So I got stuck into the Zooms and I was joining the Zooms, and I got 45 days, and then I had a relapse again, and I call it a relapse because it wasn't just a Friday night drinking and then a Saturday night drinking. It was like days drinking morning to night. And then that led me to the October, and I had another relapse. And again, I restarted. I joined the Zooms in October 2021 was actually when I'd said to Ben was looking for some help with the tech, and I was like, I'll help, because I thought, go all in here, get involved in this whole alcohol-free movement, get involved in everything, make it part of your life. So I did that, and that was really outside my comfort zone as well, because I'm quite a shy person. So I started doing that, but I just, as much as I was removing the alcohol, which I could do emotionally, I couldn't deal with life. I was suffering really bad with bulimia, and I just wasn't dealing with life at all. Like, everything just seemed really, really difficult. And the more I found things difficult, the more I hated myself. Because I had, from the outside, I had a great job with the most supportive manager. I've got to give my manager Lorena a mention because she's been so, so supportive, and the rest of the team. I had the most supportive family, like three amazing boys. I mean, I'm a single mum with three boys, and I couldn't have a better relationship with them, even through my drinking. They've been so, so supportive. My mum, my brother and my sister. So I had all this stuff, everything to live for, and I had no life left in me. And that sounds really, really dramatic, but it's the truth. So I was kind of going through all that, and I got through Christmas, and then January, I picked up a drink again in the January, and it was like a 10-day long relapse of just sheer destruction. And that took me to my worst rock bottom. I actually thought that everybody would be better without me. I really, really felt like that. If I heard other people saying that before, I would think, oh God, there's always hope. I had no hope. I just thought, I'm trying this. I'm stopping drinking. I'm throwing myself in there. I hated myself. So I hit rock bottom, and thankfully, by the grace of God, I'm now here and I'm 12 months sober. to go into more detail, so I hit rock bottom in February 22, and luckily enough, I had private healthcare through my employer. I was able to speak to my manager, and I spoke to Bupa Healthcare, and a psychiatrist recommended that I go into the Priory for depression, anxiety, and bulimia, not addiction. Now, well, I was absolutely addicted. I was in active addiction, drinking alcoholically, using drugs. But the psychiatrist realised that I needed more help than just to stop drinking. And that's something I'll be forever grateful for, because I know that not everybody gets that. You don't get that in the NHS. I went into the Priory for 4 weeks full-time. Leaving the boys was the hardest thing I ever had to do. It was 4 weeks of therapy every single day, and it was group therapy, which is my worst nightmare. Because I'm very much I think it's Fearon Cotton that said at one time, she's a happy hermit, and that's me. I'm very much happy in my own company. What I have learned, though, is that being in my own company is not good for me. And I'm good at recognising that now because of the help that I got in the Priory. The things I learned in the Priory were just, it's things that are so small that you think, wow, how did I not know that before? Like, how did I not know to name this emotion? Or, like, just such the simple... I mean, I didn't realise how low my self-esteem was. Like, I didn't even realise that when they said to me in one of the group therapy sessions about having really low self-esteem, I was like, no, I'm kind of confident and I carry myself well. Oh, God, my self-esteem was in my boots. And fear as well. My whole life, I ran away in fear. I mean, I even go back to... So if I go back to high school, when I left primary school, I was, like, kind of... in the popular group, and I was good at everything. And then I went to high school and I was like a duck out of water, and I was the ugly duckling in my mind as well. It was like I had straight hair and nice looking in my mind, and I had curly hair and ugly, like all these things that you deal with as a teenager. And I remember I was must have been 3 months into that high school, and I was very, very cheeky and abusive in one of my home economics classes, and I knew I was going to get a bad report. And I really didn't want to disappoint my mum. So I made up this whole story that I wanted to change schools because they had better sports in this school. And I changed high school just so that I wouldn't get a bad report. Now that is bonkers. That's the first kind of indication of me running away and not being able to deal with things. And then when I was 16, I met the father of my three boys. And I'd just turned 16. And he was 12 years older than me, so my family weren't supportive in that. And I stayed out one night with him, and I was so scared to go home that we ran away to Blackpool for 2 weeks. I ran away and decided, right, we'll start a family. And within a couple of months I was pregnant. I ended up, I called my mum and I came back home. And my mum was ever as supportive as she always was. And I think, when I think of all the fear, it was just fear of letting my mum down. And there was no fear of, oh God, my mum's going to kill me, because my mum was the most supportive, amazing person, an amazing mum that you could ever have. My dad took a brain hemorrhage when my sister was 4, I was 6, and my brother was 8. And my dad was only 32, and my mum was 31. And my mum nursed him while looking after the three of us, doing hairdressing part-time. Then she took a job as a nurse. She had so much to deal with, and she did it without, in my eyes, she did it without, just did it with ease. Like, she was just my hero. She's still my hero, but she was my hero. She just dealt with everything. And I think, as a youngster, not because my mum, and I realised this in the Priory as well, they taught me that by saying how you feel, like, I felt as if I had to keep everything to myself, and I felt as if I had to deal with everything myself. And I would have never admitted that before, because I thought it looked bad on my mum. And they taught me that it doesn't look bad on your mum. That was your perception as a child, that you didn't want to give your mum any more hassle, any more upset. And because my sister and brother maybe didn't think the same as me, doesn't mean to say that they're different. Like, we were in the same situation and we perceived things differently, I suppose. My my response was to run away with everything. So yes, I learnt that. And probably I learnt that I had been, my whole life had been, I'd been running on fear, absolute fear. I stayed in that relationship through, I was with my ex-husband and we had the three boys. I was with him for 12 years and that wasn't a healthy relationship. But I stayed in that relationship because I wanted to prove everyone that I wasn't just this 16-year-old tart that got pregnant to a 20-year-old. That was my thinking, obviously, at the time. And so I was like, I will make this work no matter what. No matter what I need to do, I will make this work. And when I eventually told Mum and my dad, when my dad was six, he probably didn't take it in the same as my mum because he was left paralysed and brain damaged. So my mum taught him to walk and talk and everything again at home herself, because they were just going to put him in an old people's stroke ward and said that he would just be a vegetable for his life. But my mum brought him home, learned him to walk and talk and everything herself. And we had such a great childhood with lots of holidays and lots of great times. And that's how, as well, I never like to talk about running away and things because I'm like, God, that'll look bad in my family. But it's relevant to where my drinking got to, which is why I'm talking about it. And I know I'm all over the place here. So yeah, when I eventually came home and I told my mum that I was pregnant, she had said, look, me and your dad will bring up the baby. You go and enjoy your life. This doesn't need to be kind of the end of your life. We will bring up the baby. And I was like, no, not a chance. I'll do this. I'll make this work. So we did. We made that relationship work for 12 years. And then that relationship ended and I went into another relationship. And that relationship was I had some of my best times. We had great nights out. We had lots of family time. It was really enjoyable, but I told a lot of lies in that relationship. I hated myself for telling that. I was so scared of losing this person. It probably could have been anybody. I was just scared of losing this person. I didn't think I was good enough for this person. And I told a lot of lies to kind of make it look like I was coping with everything and I had it all together. And then the more lies you tell, the more you hate yourself. And then the bulimia came back into play then as well. And then the drinking increased and progressed. And yeah, that led to me to where I am now.
And when you realised that you didn't have to run away from anything anymore, how did that feel?
Oh, the best feeling in the world. I think understanding, because when I say that I told a lot of lies and I did a lot of things through fear, like everything, I told lies so that I didn't need to face things. I ran away so that I didn't need to face things. And I'm not making excuses by saying it was because I was full of fear. That it's not excuses, but I need to understand it so that I don't make the same mistakes again. And that the way I make sure I don't make the same mistakes again is to, one, never lift a drink again. Because I'm always going to struggle with low self-esteem. I'll always struggle with my eating habits. I'll always struggle with intrusive, obsessive thoughts. But by not drinking and by connecting and making friends with people that understand it and get it and can teach me and keep me in the right place is how I don't make the mistakes again and how I don't hurt people again.
Kelly, please forgive my ignorance here. I want to ask about the, you know, I know that I'm always going to have these kind of thoughts, what you just said then. You went on holiday and you had no kind of temptation to drink alcohol. And that's something that you probably wouldn't have thought definitely a year ago.
Yep.
And as I said, please do forgive my ignorance here. How do you, why do you say, I know that this is always going to be there for me? Does that actually help the process?
Yeah, I think accepting that it's always going to be there. When I look back to, I didn't really start drinking. My drinking didn't really ramp up until I started going out and drinking in 2011. So from 1999 to 2011, I didn't really drink a lot, but I wasn't well. Yeah, I can see at the time, you wouldn't have been able to see that I wasn't well myself, but I know that I wasn't well myself now that I've done the work. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think I'm always going to have, I think it's the same for everyone. I think if you don't exercise, you don't eat healthy, you sit in the house yourself, you don't talk to people about anything, then your head's not going to be in a good place. And I think if I don't do those things, then I'll ultimately, I still struggle with my mental health to an extent. I take medication for it, which I've reduced by a third, which is great. But I still struggle. And I think by accepting that I'll always struggle, but I won't, I'll always have these personality traits. I'm very a compulsive thinker. It's hard to explain. So if I've got a lot on and I start to feel like overwhelmed, it just feels like fear. And then now I can name that emotion and I'll be like, okay, what are you scared of here? And then I can stop and say, right, I've got five things I need to do. Just tick one off at a time. And it takes away that fear. And I'm probably not the best person to explain it, but it works for me. And even now,
You're explaining it brilliantly,
I think you are,
Kelly,
yeah,
actually.
Absolutely.
And what's really interesting, I mean, it's a cliche, but alcohol sounds like pouring petrol on a fire in this instance. But I suppose also it takes away that kind of inhibition. It takes away decision making. Yep. You know, there's lots of things that drinking can lead to purely because of the substance of what alcohol is and what chemically it does to the brain. But it's really interesting hearing you talk, because there's actually quite a big tapestry of things here that you have to be active in to make sure that you are operating as happily and as healthily as you can be. You know, connection, you've talked about the getting out for a run, not staying indoors. You talked about, you know, being mindful about, right, how, checking in with yourself, how am I feeling? Right, I'm feeling this way. Ah, actually, that's because of this. That kind of self-awareness seems like a massive part of it as well. It feels like there's a lot that you have put in place now to keep building the kind of happy, successful, healthy life that you want. Are you enjoying it? Are you enjoying the process?
So what I was going to say is, it sounds like a lot when you rhyme it off like that. It sounds like a lot, but when you're not drinking and you're connecting with people every day and you're living a healthy life, then it's much easier. It's not like a tick box exercise every day. I need to do this, I need to do that. It comes naturally. It's consistently part of my routine. And I'm very, very happy, like very happy. I'm on my own with the three boys. Sometimes you can get a bit lonely and think, oh God, it would be nice to be in a relationship. And then I think, ah, fuck, that's somebody else to please. No, I'm fine on my own. Excuse my language.
Yeah, bar bag.
and I've honestly not got time. I mean, this community has given me a whole new life. This community and removing alcohol from my life has given me a whole new life. Like, I still have to pinch myself sometimes, the friends I've got. I'm like, how did this happen? This happened by me being me, not by trying to be someone else, not by telling lies, which sounds like I'm calling myself a compulsive liar. I wasn't, but do you know that there was a pretense constantly of trying to be someone I thought I should be.
It's kind of people-pleasing almost.
Yeah. People please without them asking you to please them. It comes from you. It's not that people are pushing you to be a certain way. When I think of my ex as well, he would have totally accepted me the way I was, even through some of the destruction. But I still tried to be something else. I still tried to be more. I wasn't happy just being me. And now I am. And the community and removing alcohol has been a big part of that. But being in the Priory and being taught how to name an emotion, how to rationalise it, how to name what you're thinking, whether you're ruminating, catastrophizing, all those simple things that you don't get taught. And you do, would actually, now, if there's people that come into this community and their mental health's not in, like, really, really bad, it doesn't need to be bad. Like, your mental health doesn't need to be really poor to understand and benefit from knowing things like overthinking and ruminating and catastrophizing. And this is all things that we talk about in the community in Zooms, because we're all open and honest and talk about real things. I've learned so much from this community as well, is what I'm trying to say.
I love the identifying emotion thing. I think that's so powerful. And I remember someone saying this to me ages ago, you know, for example, I'm uncomfortable, I'm unhappy, separate it and put feel in the middle. I feel uncomfortable, I feel unhappy. It's not who you are, it's how you currently feel. We are not our emotions. And it's really powerful, that, isn't it, being able to spot that and take that kind of step away and look down on it and go, right, actually, what is actually going on here? am I just really tired?
Yeah.
Am I, you know, but sometimes it is that simple, isn't it?
100% it's that simple. And now if I would have used to as well, when I ask for time on my own, I'm very much a person that needs time on my own. I got overwhelmed if I'm with people for too long. And now I had an instance a couple of months ago where I just said to my mum, the boys were out, I said to mum, look, I'm not talking to no one on the phone today, I'm just going to chill myself. And previously I would have been like, I don't want to do that because then they'll worry about me. And in actual fact, by doing that, I was able to make sure I was okay so that I didn't cause any worry to anyone. And it was just a case of just breathing and having some time and moan. And I'd never have done that before. And that's me recognising overwhelm, which comes through for me is fear. I start to feel really fearful. And then I realise that actually I'm just tired. I just need a bit of time myself. I'm just feeling overwhelmed. It's not actual fear of anything in particular.
When we first started chatting and you said you were going to take us back, you know, to some of your previous life when it was difficult, and you suggested that it's like talking about a different person, and it is, in many ways it is. And I think what is phenomenal about all of it, and this is such a big deal, and you've just touched on this as well, is that by, in your case, joining Over the Influence, making connections. This is it, Kelly. This is you, okay? This is the Kelly that we know and love. And it sounds really flippant of me to say, oh, we don't care about your past life. We care massively. It's why we exist. Of course we care about what you've been through and what's brought you to this point. But it's enough that you are who you are. And to see the work you do with Over the Influence and to see the pure friendships that you've made with other people in this group, it makes me dead emotional. I think it's phenomenal. And it's at the heart of what we do at Over the Influence. Yeah, you know, of course, people come in, I want to stop drinking, right, brilliant. Support, motivation, inspiration. But without that connection, it won't happen. And you have actively, you know, sort that out. You've made friends, best friends for life. You're going to be stuck with some of these people forever, I'm sad to say. And you probably know who we're talking about. But it's wonderful. Just talk us through some of those connections and how important that has been to you.
It's been massive. I mean, straight away, yous were kind of the first friends initially that were like, look, Kelly, I was on my knees. I wasn't good. I was letting you guys down with IT stuff because I kept relapsing. And yous just supported me and liked me for who I was. And then that's where the friendship grew. And I just thought, God, I'm just being me. And they know everything and they like me. And then I started talking to other people in the community and just got friendly with other people. And then I met Danny, who's my best friend, and us two kind of helped each other at the beginning because the two of us were kind of relapsing and not doing very well, and the two of us just clicked and helped each other, and he's been a massive help. And a massive turning point for me as well was I went and stayed with Freddie, who's in the community. So I had came out of the Priory in the April, and I unfortunately lifted a drink a couple of times between April and lifting my last drink and March 19th, 2023. But in March 2020, when did we do Malvern? March?
Oh, it was about that time, God. Wasn't it? Yeah, last March.
Yes, yeah, so it was the end of March, and I was thinking, I'm only a couple of weeks sober here. Freddie's a couple of years sober. She's doing so well. She's not going to want someone like me going and staying with her. So I went down and stayed with Freddie because she stays in London, and I stayed with her for a couple of nights while we did Malvern. And I was in such a panic thinking, oh, I like time on my own, and how am I going to sit in her company and that whole time, and what are we going to talk about? And I had nothing to worry about. It was the most amazing couple of days, and it boosted my confidence so much because I came home and I thought, God, I was just me, and I just when I needed a bit of time myself, I was confident enough to say it. And most of the time, Freddie was like, thank fuck, I want time myself as well.
Yeah, this is sober. Sobers like the sleep and they like to be on their own.
Yeah. But it was a real kind of, well, I can just be myself and I can make friends. So Freddie's been amazing as well. And then, oh God, there's so many names, but Susan, who's like, love Susan to bits. Now there's me and Susan, there's a big difference in age, and I've been down to stay with Susan as well. We did the half marathon together.
Amazing.
And she's been a massive help for me as well. My last relapse, March 23. I remember speaking to her after it, and she said, well, why did you have a drink? I was at a work event, loads of alcohol available. And I was like, I'm not going to drink, no chance I'm going to drink. And then I ended up giving in to temptation. Susan said, why did you do it? And I said, well, I was just so tempted. There was just so much alcohol there. And she was like, right, get rid of the bullshit. Why did you really have a drink? There's temptation everywhere. Why did you give in there? And I was like, well, I suppose I just wanted to enjoy myself like everyone else. And she was like, how do you know those people were enjoying yourself? And I was like, well, I don't. And she said, what did you think when you had a drink? And I thought to myself, I'm away from the boys and my mum, so I'm not going to hurt them. I'll just have a drink tonight and then I'll go home and restart tomorrow. And she said to me, what evidence have you got to suggest that you can only drink one night? And it's just such a simple question. I've been told to play it forward so many times in my life, but just that simple question I ask myself, I've asked myself often over the past year, if it's ever come into my head, what evidence have you got to suggest that you can only drink one night? And I have got no evidence.
Zero.
It's been a long time since I've been able to just drink one night. Susan is, she's just the believer. Susan is, she's amazing as well.
She
but
is.
The friends, just, there's just so many to mention. I'm just, I feel like they'll, and it sounds so cheesy, I feel like the luckiest person in the world. I've got so many friends. And when I was so overwhelmed when I got to my year as well, because it was like, I got so many messages and I was like, these people aren't just being nice on Zooms or nice, they actually, they're proper friends, and my family. And I just feel like the luckiest person in the world. I really do. And it's just because I removed alcohol from my life and found you guys.
I've really enjoyed listening to your story, Kelly. I mean, we know a lot of it. We are friends and we've been friends for a while now. But it's lovely to hear it, you know, all in one go. I know it might sound a bit silly, but just hearing you kind of talk about it. And because you've got a really important message and you've talked about self-awareness in this chat, the importance of self-awareness, honesty, not just in terms of in your relationships, but honesty with yourself. You know, where am I? Who am I? How am I feeling? Acceptance of that. You know, okay, I might be feeling this way at the moment. Rather than kind of running away from it, actually accepting it, sitting with it. But I think the most important thing is that, you know, yes, Sharon's don't half-ass it phrase, but for you, it's very much about being active in this, isn't it? It's going, right, this is how I want to live. This is how I want to feel. And therefore, to do that, I've got to do this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
And you know what? You spoke about Andy Ramage earlier. I read Andy's emails every week. He did a pretty brilliant email last week about motivation. Did you see it? Where he was talking about the difference between the motivation to start and the motivation to continue being different things. And the motivation to continue, so when you listen to successful people, what they say is it's not about the result. It's about how it makes them feel doing it there. So that person, let's say it is a 50k ultra marathon, which is completely and utterly nuts, but hey, some people like doing it. The motivation to keep the training going, it's not about the end result. It's about, this makes me feel good.
Yeah.
I do this. I am a runner because it makes me feel good, because it has positive impacts on my mental health. I like being outside. I like the feeling of completing a run and feeling proud of that, you know, that small bit of training in the bigger whole. You know, I think that's What I get from you, Kelly, is that kind of, you know, turn up, be active, do it. Okay, a bit of tough love along the way, maybe at times. For example, Susan. I know that me and Shaz a few times were like, right, come on now. Kelly, come on.
Kelly,
you know,
we can't cope with the tech shit without you.
And I do
it was purely selfish. Yeah,
yeah. Of course
we need
was.
You back. Yeah, we weren't supporting you as friends. We were just supporting you because we don't know what the fuck we're doing ourselves. So.
I do joke about Shaz saying get your full arse in there. That's like, it's been much more than get your full arse. Put your full arse in. There's been a lot more talks and kicks up the arse than that along the way, which I'll just be forever grateful for. But I suppose the message that I want to give is I wasn't born an alcoholic. I wasn't always an alcoholic, and I didn't become one overnight. And I say that quite a lot because I really believe that it's a progressive addiction. It's an addictive substance. If you're using it to de-stress or deal with emotions and not just to go out and socialise, then you're in dodgy territory as far as I'm concerned. I think anyone can become addicted, and I think it can cause problems in anyone's life if they're using it problematically.
And just to pick up on what you said there, yes, anybody can become addicted, but listening to you talk for the last 45, 50 minutes, anybody can recover as well. And I think your story highlights just how, I don't know what words to use, just how inspiring you are. You know, you talked about your difficulty in using the word pride when we first started chatting. Aside from your mum and your boys, because I've spent time in their company in London and that made me cry a lot that weekend, I know for a fact how they're just so unbelievably proud of you. It was glorious. Aside from your family, there's nobody prouder than me and Ben. We are ridiculously proud of you, of how far you've come. And we also know how hard it is, you know, every day. Like you say, you do have to put the work in. It doesn't just, oh, I'm going to stop drinking now and tra-la-la, isn't life amazing? It's not like that. It's difficult. But we feel really, really proud of you. And we're chuffed to bits that you are, you know, an official part of Over the Influence. So from myself and Ben, thank you for being you. And thank you for doing what you do. And thank you for tolerating our nonsense. But most of all, Kelly, thank you for sharing your story, because we have been banging on at you for months and months and months. And she finally gave in, Ben. So, Kelly, it's been a pleasure.
I can't thank you guys enough. I mean, I was on my knees literally before I went into the Priory, and you supported me the whole time and never gave up. Believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. Even from the Priory, I was joining Zooms and I felt no judgment and nothing but support to be able to sit on those Zooms and be honest and open and tell people where I was at. I get nothing but support. And I think what you said there about making it part of your life, I think it's so important. Not only when you decide that you want to remove alcohol for a better lifestyle, I think it's important to have connection to remind yourself why you're doing it, but especially when it's been such an addictive part of your life, it needs to be an everyday work in progress. And being connected with people that get it, being connected with people that understand and that support you and give you no judgment whatsoever is so important. It's not just a stop drinking, start running and exercising. It's a whole lifestyle and making a new life for yourself that makes it sustainable, as far as I'm concerned. And that's why you guys are stuck with me forever.
Oh, God. Ben, did you hear that?
Don't cry. Don't cry, Shaz. You know what? Let me bring it back to humour, because, Kelly, thank you for sharing your story, but also thank you for being Scottish, because it led me to these Scottish insults on Reddit, and my God, it's just, I'm going to be on here for hours. I just want to say, Kelly, I love you, but you're tap water shite, you wee jobby dobber, and leave you with that thought. I don't know what that means either. I love that, is it? You tap water shite. I love that as an insult. Oh, this one. Your face looks like your arse, and your arse is chewing toffee. That's nice, isn't it?
Okay. I like that a lot. Just repeat that. That's really good.
Hang on. Your face looks like your arse, and your arse is chewing toffee.
And on that note, Kelly, it's been an absolute pleasure. I just want to quickly add as well that we've been friends for the best part of 3 years. I'm glad it's taken you this long to come on the podcast, because it's taken me 3 years to actually understand the accent. And I'm not even joking when I say that. I understood every word of what you said during that podcast. Kelly, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for being you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.